to my mind, the rise and rise of US asset prices has been a function of the emergence of China, the policies that China uses to keep its currency advantageously low, and then the bad fiscal policy decisions of the US. And so it's meant that all of the savings of the world have gone into speculative assets. So no surprise, the S&P is here. But of course, it's a question of what happens next.
Where does it break?
Europe is presently broken. You know, just, it has no oomph. Yeah. Its biggest company sells handbags, really beautiful handbags, but it's handbags. Yeah. The US just owns the tech. It owns the future. You're investing, you want positive carry on technology. There's no other industry. There's no other industry. The US owns that. They've started correcting the errors in their fiscal policy. The economy is growing really, really fast. China's going into a stagnation that the Japanese recognize. Japan's got a hot stock market, but a very weak economy. And the system worked really well when the US wasn't growing. But the US is now growing, and so it has an interest rate which is much higher than Europe can afford. The UK can't afford it. China can't afford it. Japan can't afford it. And so the US is paying more for cash, and all of the capital in the rest of the world is coming into US assets. And so everything is overvalued. Now, what happens next is something breaks. I don't know if it, you know, 1998, it was LTCM. Something will break. You know, last year it was a bank. Maybe there'll be more banks, but something will break. And the ECB is at 4% and it has to start cutting interest rates. But imagine the Fed's at 5.5. If the ECB goes to 3.5 or 3, even more money is going to come into US assets.
Yeah.
And so you can imagine a conversation where the Fed, and this happened in 1927, it was a very, very similar setup where money was, again, fleeing out of the UK and Europe and going into the US. And the UK had, sterling was on the gold standard at a level that was too high. No one wanted to own it because there was a fear of devaluation. And so the UK had to pay a very high interest rate. Now, back then, a very high interest rate was 4%. But the unemployment was huge, and they needed to cut rates, but they couldn't. Except they went to the New York Fed, and they said, actually, we need you to save the rest of the world. We can cut rates if you cut rates. But if you don't cut rates, we can't cut rates. And if we can't cut rates, we're going to blow up. And so in 1927, the Fed was persuaded that it had to ignore the really hot domestic economy, and it had to bail out predominantly the British economy. And that extra liquidity made, you know, the stock market of 1929, and things became preposterous. You know, trees don't grow to the sky, and they fell down. And I wonder if what we're seeing just now, the S&P is down less than 5% from its high. But for, I think, almost a year, the biggest decline was 2%. So five is not a dip, but it's 2.5 times bigger than before. But I think there's a danger that, a danger. I'm being a fantasist. I try and fantasize scenarios, and then I try and look at the charts for confirmation. I wonder if stocks, US stocks and whatever, could have a proper like 20% correction. That the economic news continues to be poor in the rest of the world, but in the US is better and better, and investors begin to expect the Fed to hike rates.
Mm-hmm.
And if that came around, so my fantasy is if the S&P fell 20% between now and the summer, I'd want to buy stocks, and I'd want to kind of buy an option on interest rates being cut before by September, October this year in America to save the rest of the world.
How do you reason if stocks go down 20% and you say, okay, it's time to buy stocks, but you don't know where the bottom is? Something more shitty can always happen. Do you just size the position?
So you can't do that unless you sell today. And that's a big ask. You're like, well, you've got to leave the party. You've got to risk that it goes up another 20%. And that's on you.
Yeah.
I'm saying, for me, I don't even think it's 50-50. Just now. I think it's kind of 20%. It goes up 20% and 80% that it goes down 20. But everyone has to reach their own conclusions on that. But that's the only way you can do it. You say, hey, listen, the last 6 months, I mean, regardless of what you do, I just don't think there's sufficient upside in the market just now to warrant the risk of underwriting it being down 20. Because to your point, if it does fall 20, you ain't buying any. You're holding on and hoping it's going to turn. You know, mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you can come in with, you can do call spreads or put spreads and have a fixed loss, never be naked. So you can deploy that. What I do is I say, look, everything is overvalued. So my total risk size is modest. So one way to think of it is I've got a brilliant, fantastically smart friend here, and he has no more than 10% of his net worth. So he's like, what am I worth? You know, and you include the house value, you take away your mortgage, if you have a mortgage, and you add it all up. And he never has more than 10% of that number at risk. Never. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this is a risky, it's a preposterous business. We're trying to guess the future. Why would you risk 10% of your net worth? So that's my kind of starting point. And let's say my net worth, therefore, is $1 million. Okay. Just now, I wouldn't want to have more than 200,000 in stocks. And just now, I'd actually be, yeah. I'd be trying to cut that to like either 0 or 5. In that metric, that'd be, I'd be like 0 to 50,000. I don't technology stocks. The other ones seem to matter. I've been kind of like anywhere between 200 and 400,000 in Bitcoin. Today I would be 200,000 and really looking to cut that to 50,000 as well. I mean, okay, so like today I'd be 50,000 Bitcoin, 50,000 Nasdaq. I would still be buying those leaps on the TLT. So in $1 million portfolio, I'd be spending $50,000, and that'd be my biggest risk position. And that's 50,000 that can go to zero as if time goes away. But that's the thing that might save me. I always have a gun in my socks or something, just in case bad people come up. And then the thing, which really excites me, but it's very hard to play it, is with that $1 million, I'd want to be long $1 million and short like 500,000 of yen and 500,000 of the Chinese currency. Now, that's hard to put on.
So the yen, why? Because of China? Everyone talks about Japan, and honestly, in the world of narratives, I'm unsure if it's just another narrative to shift money elsewhere. Shit's happening here. So why don't we move capital over there? For example, Brazil doesn't fit the bill anymore. So let's talk about India. To me, it's just a game of narratives.
Hey, I'm the narrative guy. Something profound has happened, so we can actually talk factually. I've got 60, 70 years of price data for the Japanese yen versus the dollar. and Japanese yen has devalued by 40% in the last 2 years. I mean, let me just say that again. Japanese yen has lost 40% of its value versus the US dollar. 60 years of data, and that's just happened. And everyone's going, yeah, but I'm like, let me say it again. The Japanese yen has lost 40% of its value. Okay. The pushback is, hey, like, shut up. Japanese interest rates are zero, and they're 5.5% in America. And at some point, American interest rates are going to come down to zero, and so the currency will weaken. Maybe. Okay. But maybe that doesn't happen.
In the past, the US had interest rates high. It hasn't always been zero.
The US has not enjoyed this economic growth since the period 2003 to 2006. And whenever, so the US being the reserve currency and all the money being tied to it, it doesn't help when the US grows very fast because they've got to raise interest rates. And then interest rates break things. You know, so the last time it grew was international sovereign money financing speculation in the housing market. And it was a great boom. And then it crashed. And today we've got sovereign international savings financing smart fiscal US policy, and the US is booming and interest rates are not coming down, and it'll break things now. And it'll break things because the rest of the world has to come and match the US. Now, you know, the 10-year and 30-year JGBs up until like very, very recently have yielded nothing. Yeah. And yet the Japanese government spends 30% of its revenue on debt service at zero. So imagine JGBs gave you the same yield as US treasuries.
So the US has to bring rates down?
Brings rates down, its stock market is going to double. You know, it's, so this is why I always wanted... Maybe my allocations there, I said 50,000, $1 million portfolio, and I said 50,000 in NASDAQ, 50,000 in Bitcoin. I should have said that I'd probably be, today I'd probably be 150,000. So the money that I took out of NASDAQ and Bitcoin, I put into gold futures, not gold miners, for other reasons. But you cannot, so you can't go to zero because there are these tail events where equities can go up like a lot. I mean, if the US cut interest rates in a surprise manner this year with the economy being strong, I mean, where's the S&P? The S&P is, what, 4,000 something?
5,060 now, more or less.
I'd buy 10 or 15,000 strikes on calls. Because the market will just go, I mean, it won't go there in 6 months, but.
Yeah, but you are assuming they just cut rates because of other countries' problems. What happens to the US economy if rates are kept high?
So the increased interest rates very rapidly, and the expansion in rates was the highest, was the biggest increase in rates they've ever done in the history of the Federal Reserve. And they didn't break anything. They didn't break anything. And it doesn't look as if they didn't break anything.
Yeah.
And they have a history of cutting interest rates to bail out the rest of the world. But remember, COVID, the entire US economy, the household sector, financial sector, everyone, they locked in 30-year rates at 2%, which is why nothing is broken.
Yeah.
But the thing that is broken is no one is buying a new house. Like, so normally I live in Chicago in a nice suburb. I bought my house for $500,000, and things are going well, and there's a really nice house and in another neighborhood, it's kind of the same as my house, but I really like it. It's nicer. I can't do that because my mortgage payments, I'd have to take out a new mortgage. My mortgage payments would, I think, be 50% more than I'm paying now.
Okay, Hugh. But if they cut rates dramatically, don't you think it will cause imbalances if the only reason they cut is to take care of Japan's system?
So if that came to pass, then again, I think the parallel with 1927 to 1930s is very apt because it was the death of the gold standard. They had designed a system. The system is meant to bring you to equilibrium. I keep boring people about trade surpluses. Like, the system is not working because China every year records a profound trade surplus. And international trades, what's meant to happen is your currency appreciates, you get richer vis-a-vis the rest of the world, and you import more because, you know, your currency's gone up and a BMW is cheaper if you import it. And then your purchase of the BMW creates jobs in Germany, and then they export more and the system balances. That is not happening. It's not happening owing to explicit trade policies being taken by the Asian countries. And what that does is it creates more and more funny money, which goes into asset prices and makes everything expensive. So the system is failing. System is failing. And it's all I'm saying is it's going to fail more. And in failing more, it's going to make asset prices even more ludicrously overvalued. And then at some point, it'll blow up. Now, when it blows up, you see, I'm going to be writing about this soon. When it blows, well, two steps. If that begins to happen, I think 10-year and 30-year treasury bond yields in America will go very, very low. And that's why I own the TLT LEAPS. Okay. Now, I'm describing
the blow-up scenario.
If you remember, 10-year interest rates, I think, were 16% in 1982. And then the Fed started cutting, inflation was very low, and 10-year bond prices went up, the yield fell. 2 years later, the bond yields were back at 14%. And you look back and you're like, that's just fucking crazy. But it was the recency bias of what had happened. And so when the American economy improved, people panicked and they sold bonds again. And so what I want to say was there was like a double bottom in the price of U.S. Treasury bonds, and that created this 50-year bull market. And I think that 50-year bull market is going to end in the next 2 years. And I think that the great price high that we saw in COVID for the treasuries, we won't get to the same high, but I think we could get pretty close. And if that happens, you sell every U.S. treasury, you short it. But you make money from the – so no one wants to own them just now. So you buy options because you don't want to buy – I can't buy them because the price is going down just now. So I can buy little options. Because if that happens – and remember, if the U.S. can't cut interest rates initially and bonds keep selling off – people have stopped talking about it, but you pointed it out. A year ago, we lost Silicon Valley Bank because their biggest asset was 10 and 30-year U.S. government bonds. And it was fine because you don't have to market to market. But then people start pulling money out of the bank, and then suddenly you're like, oh, we're bankrupt. Okay. Well, that problem hasn't gone away. Your Bank of America has got, if it had to sell its bond portfolio, it would be bankrupt.
Yeah. Okay, now,
Bank of America was bankrupt in 2008, but that was okay because U.S. debt GDP was 60%. Well, today it's 125. So if the U.S. comes in, it's like, we got it. You know, we're the U.S. government. We're going to build the banking sector. But people like me will sell those bonds But the question is, what do we buy? Gold and agricultural farmland. I don't know. Agricultural farmland is well bid. And actually, you're trying on private cash generative businesses with no debt. And you'll be in a, so it'll be 100 years since we destroyed a currency system. And the anniversary is in, what, 6 years' time? I think somewhere between then and now.
So the only reason to buy gold is because paper money will go to hell, basically. You're just preserving the value of your wealth.
I've made a lot of money from gold, but I'm very cynical about it.
Yeah, I know. I would prefer to buy a boat, because, I mean, it doesn't make sense to buy gold. But I guess if you need to keep cash anywhere else than under your mattress, you buy gold.
There are times. Gold is not an agent of chaos. The world is finding lots of agents of chaos today. But it definitely benefits from chaos. You know, there are times when gold goes crazy. So normally I'm really pushed to have more than 5% in gold. Today I'd want to be 15. And I can imagine an environment where it's almost like half of my money would be in gold.
Do you mean physical gold? What about gold miners?
Do not buy gold mining stocks. They are shit. Look at the chart of GDX. Gold has gone up 6 times since 2004, and the gold mining ETF is flat. Flat. Do not buy gold. Just buy more gold.
What happens if China blows up? How long can they keep the music on?
That's simple. So just keep watching USDCNY as a chart. I posted on Twitter today, and then someone drew a rude picture with testicles and things, but it's quite funny. It is 4 basis points away from setting off like being in a nuclear power plant, and everything starts going woo.
That's the thing. How long do you think they can keep this going?
As long as they had currency stability. But if so the dollar's moved from 100 to 106 this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fucking around at 106, 105. If it goes to 110, if it goes to 115, wow, bad things are happening. Bad things are happening. And this, so again, but try it. So again, my mantra is listen to music, be happy, be blissful. And don't overcommit, and really don't over. So normally when you're bullish, my rule is I can't overcommit. I'm capped at 10% of my net worth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying just now, of that 10% hard limit, I want to use 1% of it. Well, I want to use 10 percentage points of it in terms of risk assets. I probably want to use a lot of it in terms of trying to bet that the dollar actually rises. So again, keep it balanced. You can have a currency position benefiting from the dollar appreciating. You've got to keep invested in equities because the central tendency is to rise.
Yeah.
You can't be greedy. You have some, so you feel it.
I wonder if the dollar and the stock market can go up if gold and Bitcoin are also going up.
You get. Well, yes. So since quantitative easing was March 2009, the dollar's gone from 80 to 105. The stock market now, 2009 is the low, but the S&P's gone up 4 times, and the gold price is probably doubled. So yeah. Your default setting was that doesn't happen, and I'm like, lady, that's been happening for the last 15 years. Oh shit, yeah. You see how we get the mind fog, the conceit, the arrogance comes down because we've got preset narratives and don't see the reality.
Yeah, it's true. Because I have been watching the dollar closely, and I have been puzzled, especially recently, when gold started to take off. I really wondered if the stock market can go further if the dollar does not come down.
Well, that's the scenario I very poorly tried to sketch out to you. That so I think what I was saying is, and again, who cares? Because at a personal investment level, it's almost impossible to play. But volatility across asset classes is going to go up, and the volatility is going to be unlocked by the dollar rising. It's going to cause things to break. U.S. equities are going to be very weak. It's going to elicit a monetary response from the Federal Reserve. And then U.S. equities are going to be incredibly strong. And then it's going to blow up.
It's a Tarantino movie for you, Hugh. In the end, it always blows up.
And again, bear in mind, I've said to you, in the last 25 years, we've had, what, 3 or 4 events that in a normal bell curve distribution, you'd expect one event in 100 years, and we've had 4 and 3 in 25 years. So
that means to me that I don't have to be invested all the time. I can wait, because why not?
Well, I mean, I've tried to describe a volatility machine, and the volatility machine ultimately pushes prices a lot higher. But there are these massive sell-offs. You could have bought, you could have bought Bitcoin for 17,000, beginning of last year, or the end of 2022. You know, you could have bought the S&P, I don't know, 40% lower, like 2 years ago. So just now, you're looking for opportunities. But you know, gold has just broke. It's really made a, I said to you, dollar yen. Looking at a 40-year chart, something very powerful has just happened, and I can see the afterburn and what gold is doing, and I'm beginning to speculate. Well, if this continues, then I think equities come down. I think the Federal Reserve cuts interest rates, and then people say we're doomed, and then they buy bonds. But so it's all stages. But just now, I think. I'm going to post something tomorrow, a silly picture of me, and I'm going to say the most intelligent investors today are aggressively cautious.
I know what you mean. If you are going to go for it, just buy Bitcoin.
But, you know, I was trying to say well done, Bitcoin, because there was this old adage that all of the professionals worked in the bond market, and it was just all the idiots like me in the equity market. You know, like bonds had to like look ahead. They had to like work out the economy. They weren't looking at the profit margins. And I was saying, wow, you know, like S&P is only down 4%. Really dangerous things are happening in the world. I'm worried that actually, I think there's a chance Bitcoin could just, you were talking about correlations. Like, you know, if NASDAQ falls 20%, does Bitcoin fall another 20%? Maybe. So like here's like so here we go. I feed you NASDAQ falls 20%. What does gold do? What does Bitcoin do? I mean, we don't know, but
I would say Bitcoin would fall a lot more. I don't know about gold. What would prop that up?
Chaos. Like you know, literally I spend a lot of time, it's hard to believe, but with really damn intelligent people. And they're like, if this comes to pass, I don't know what to own. There's nothing, it's really hard to know what you own. And and gold is, we call it alchemy, it should be anarchy. When you throw your hands up, you say, this system is out of control, and you want to give it like a finger to the system, you buy gold, because it's preposterous. You say, you know what? You're all idiots. I'm buying the dumbest asset.
Gold is the easiest answer, actually. I mean, I would buy gold, cows, and a ranch. Then trade milk for more gold. Imagine that. And that would be a wonderful deal if chaos came to pass.
You want a private business that's cash generative, no debt. I'm looking at, there's a, it's funny, I went online, I was buying these cannabis edibles. They're really good. And so they've just gone direct to consumer. And so I went on the website, I get it delivered to Florida, and then they ship it to St. Paul's. I don't know why I'm telling you this, but and so I put my details in, and then there's just no data privacy. The guy who owns the company sends me an email. I was like, wow, this is so excited. We're so excited you're buying the product. I'm like, why do you? I'm like, well, me? What? Well, I'm buying the drugs. I'm like, where's the secrecy? But anyway, and of course, he's doing another capital raising round, and he's running at $20 million in sales, and he's capitalizing the business at 40. And it's the margin expansion. You know, I can now buy his product in St. Bars. I can buy it anywhere. Once you're free, I can buy it with my credit card. I can buy it on his website. I can get it delivered to my shipping company in Miami, and I could have it delivered to London, St. Bars, or anywhere. You know, and of course, you've seen Germany. The future is one of deregulation. So this is a consumer pharmacy business with 80% cash margins, no debt. And they've just changed the regulation. They could be doing 100 million in 5 years' time. And at that margin, it could be worth $1 billion. I'm like, I'm going to put $100,000 into that. I'm like, why not? You know, that's kind of where I am. Do I want to buy NVIDIA? I am. Maybe NVIDIA doubles. Maybe it falls 90%. You know.
Oh, no. It's Zim, Zim, Zoom, Zoom time. It's the evil acid capitalist time. Friends, family, thank you for watching the first half an hour. I'm afraid the rest is behind the dreaded, the evil paywall. It's exclusively for lovely folks on Patreon and Substack. We do hope you can find us on the other side. We really hope we whetted your appetite. Peace and love from St. Bart's, from the Asset Capitalist.